You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm happy to be here to close out another great week of our show. And I hope everyone enjoyed the speech I gave at Hammerfest. Initially, we were going to have Jason Augustus yesterday, but we were actually able to get that audio of the speech and get it cleaned up. And, you know, I thought folks would be interested. I got a lot of comments asking about hearing the speech. So I hope everyone enjoyed it yesterday. And I'm here today with Jason Augustus. So, Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Just another day in paradise, you know? Well, and you were at Hammerfest with me, along with a good number of our other party comrades. And I think, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but I think things went really well, not only in terms of my talk, but in terms of our outreach for the party, of having folks from a variety of different groups come and get to, you know, a lot of people had heard about our party and wanted to get involved, and others were hearing about it for the first time. And I think it was a great experience to show how the movement can be unified behind a political arm, and then having unity within all the different subcultures that we can all kind of pull together, and there's no need for ego or infighting when we're all just kind of pushing together on the same path. What was your takeaway?
There's not much more I can add to it other than it was just great to see everybody coming together, you know, along common grounds. Everybody that came over to our table, you know, they had a lot of questions. And it was just an all-around pleasant experience. It was great to see, none of the usual infighting that I remember from years past. It was just a really cool experience.
Well, and that's something, not to get too deep into details, but I think our listeners, I don't really think we've talked about it that much, that this is not your first foray into white nationalism. You were involved in the cause, a decade and a half ago when you were a young man. You're still a young man, but you know, when you were real young, involved in the cause, and the movement at the time did have in the United States a lot of different issues, specifically infighting. You know, couldn't go to an event without there being fist fights or things like that, or crews beefing with each other. And now that you've not only just gotten back involved, but between the work you're doing for our propaganda, everything you're doing for the party with 14 Sacred Words, an amazing amount of work. So just before we go into the news and how that relates to the speech and everything, how have you really just seen things change from when you were first involved and kind of got burned out a little bit, and now you're back with a fury? What have you seen that's changed?
What I've seen that's changed is basically the idea has become a real movement. It's not just a bunch of kids hanging, and this is not to say that the past was all, you know, things like this, but it seemed like a lot of kids were trying to latch on to something and just sort of, you know, be edgy and use the swastika. But what I saw a lot was a lot of infighting between groups, between crews, and it wasn't just about ideologies, it was about ridiculous things sometimes. It could be, that guy stole my pack of cigarettes like last month, so we all gotta jump him now. it was over some really ridiculous stuff, and that's what kind of burns me out in the first place. But recently, meeting up with you and brought me back into it. Mm-hmm. And now to be at Hammerfest and to see all those groups coming together, that it's almost like people have gone from like high school type of dealings to like, now this is a serious business.
This is revolutionary.
No, but it seems like everybody's really just grown, not just, not just physically, but mentally. And they're really prepared to make this political step and actually make forward motion. And they've just dropped all the things that were so petty in the past.
Well, it's such an important thing, and I'm happy to be able to have you here with me, and I have all of our other comrades, and so many folks, you know, at Hammerfest alone, there were several guys that that I know by reputation for the service they did in groups like the National Alliance, that have still been part of the movement. They never changed their ideology, but they, you know, they didn't see a vehicle, and now wanting to be involved, start new party chapters, getting involved in that way. And of course, they're parts of other groups, and we encourage, you know, the idea of the party is we are the political vehicle for the white nationalist movement in America, but you can be a part of a different group. And we actively encourage that to show that we're all in this together, regardless of religion, class, or subculture. We're all in this together. So it was a great experience. And, you know, I talked about it in my speech. One of the big things was discussing the rise of nationalism around the world. And, you know, it's something we don't necessarily always hear about in the American white nationalist movement. I think it's very important to realize that, you know, we're not in this by ourselves, that there's an entire worldwide movement of nationalists, both white nationalists in Europe and Latin America, South Africa, places like that, but also non-white nationalists that are fighting the same Jewish enemy, that identify it's the Jewish elites, it's the Jewish oligarchs that are pushing for the destruction of our nations, breaking down everything that we have in our cultures, attacking all religions except for one, the Jews, of course, and you know, all kind of coming together. So one of the things I talked about was Rodrigo Duterte, you know, the Punisher of the Philippines, which absolutely day by day it kind of amazes me. I was happy one of the first nationalists to publish an article right before he was elected, talking about his what he'd done in Davao City when he was a mayor for 20 years, cleaning it up, you know, having strong nationalist principles. And now as president of the Philippines, by golly, every day he gets better. It's pretty astounding. And, you know, he just actually went ahead and said that, you know, he's getting so much flack over the United States and the European Union, and talking about his cleaning up drugs and corruption of, you know, kill your local drug dealer. As I said in the, you know, the speech, you know, you see in white nationalists wear shirts like that because we understand the role of drugs in our community. And by golly, Rodrigo Duterte should be wearing that shirt because he's cleaning up the streets of the Philippines. Not just only of drug dealers, but that's been a huge element because drugs are a huge problem in the Philippines, costing countless families and lives, but also corruption, going after people in the police and the military, the judiciary, government employees, corporations that have screwed over the people that haven't fulfilled contracts. He's going after them all to make sure that justice is done. And he said that the United States has failed the Philippines, and that he doesn't expect Obama. This is a quote from him. "I do not expect Obama. I do not expect the EU to understand me," said Duterte in a speech on Thursday. "You do not understand me. And if you think it's high time for you guys to withdraw your assistance, go ahead. We will not beg for it." So he's saying right there, you know, when it comes to military support, which seems more like an occupation, when it comes to the economic support, that's bribery. He's saying, it doesn't matter. I'm putting my people first, and they're going to take care of it. And he then later said, "Go away, bring your money somewhere else. We will survive as a nation. There will always be a day for reckoning." Good golly, that's strong words from a head of state. And he's telling the entire United States, he's telling the EU, so basically the power bases of Jewish power, to piss off and saying, we're going to put our people first. So, you know, what do you think? What's your knee-jerk reaction to a head of state, you know, who's not white, but saying that he's going to put his people first? How do you think that can inspire us in America, and what do you think of his actions?
Well, you know, as a white nationalist, obviously I advocate for my people first, but as a nationalist, I don't deny that right to any other peoples. So Duterte, based. Totally. That dude's on point. And, you know, pertaining to the quote, that's cool, but I really like his original one, which was just "fuck you." And I think that, like, if I were like in control of an entire country, any foreign hostility that came to my policies, that would probably be my knee jerk reaction, mm-hmm. and it would be like basically my standard procedure for anybody that thinks I'm doing wrong or that want to bribe me with their, you know, their shekels. Fuck you.
and you know, we keep things always on the daily, on Radio Aryan and Daily Stormer. We keep it family friendly, but this is an exact quote, ladies
direct
and gentlemen.
Quote.
Yeah, that's kind of the amazing thing, that a head of state, he was that bold. I mean, it's kind of impressive, and, you know, to have that exact quote, I feel like you got to say it just to be able to understand the magnitude, because usually, I mean, this is also what we see with Donald Trump, where Donald Trump doesn't go that far, but, you know, when you have that idea of a leader, you know, as the representation of the nation, the embodiment of the nation in that leader, it's all about strength. And for so long in the West, we've had weak-kneed politicians that beg, that are very submissive. And to see heads of state, you know, like Duterte or Donald Trump just coming out and saying, "Nope, I'm a man's man. I'm going to fight for my people. I'm putting these interests first, and I don't care who you are. I'm going to bulldoze you out of my way, and this is who I am. I mean, what do you think that psychologically does to see leaders that are actually, instead of bowing down to the banks, are just flat out saying, like, hey, I'm here, I'm a brawler, and I'm fighting on behalf of my people. I mean, Duterte said that he's willing to go to hell to ensure that his people live in a paradise here on this earth. And he'll do the things that have to be done. What do you think about that? It seems like the resurgence of real masculinity, not only, you know, within white nationalism here in the United States and in Europe, but around the world, of just real leaders being men.
Well, that's just nature being nature, because nationalism is nature. And what I think that does for his people is the same thing we need for our people. It's to embolden them, to strengthen their resolve. For not only self-betterment, but the betterment of their extended family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it just puts it all into context, you know, and that's what we need. And, you know, there's been a debate within the alt-right and nationalism in America that now, as we're growing, it's time to moderate a little bit. It's time to move towards the center. I was talking with Dr. Johnson about it on a previous show, and I think that's absolute suicide. We need to be standing stronger. We need to be out there and be louder and prouder and say that we will not be moved. You know, only bullets can stop us. And if you're even going to go that far, then our blood is going to inspire more people to be able to take up the fight. So there's nothing you can do. You know, say this to the entire Jewish and capitalist system. There is nothing you can do to stop us. And I think that's so important, to stand strong. You know, and other news kind of relating to this, Ilias Kassidiaris, of Golden Dawn, who I've had the pleasure to meet, an absolutely amazing patriot that's been fighting for his people for decades. You know, truly a man's man, though. You know, he faces down with the Reds in the streets. He faces down with them in the Greek parliament. He is an absolute brawler for his people, of wanting to always put them first, fighting for the best interests of the Greek people, whether it's a farmer or a factory worker or a doctor or a lawyer, whoever, well, maybe not lawyers, you know, but putting the interests of the Greek people first as his primary concern. He's shown that time after time after time. And he just announced in the Greek parliament that the center-right party, and of course the left wing, you know, the coalition of the far left, is the current party in power. And, you know, when I was in Greece, we were talking about one of the Golden Dawn offices was recently attacked. And one of the anarchists that was arrested was actually the son of one of the coalition of the far left's parliament members. So they're in this together, you know, absolutely trying to stop nationalism. But how they're supporting Hillary Clinton, they support the European Union. And Golden Dawn has now endorsed Donald Trump in the Greek parliament, saying that his stand on secure borders, stopping illegal immigration, and taking a stand against globalism is showing the changing winds in the United States that goes around the world. And this kind of goes back to the main point of nationalism rising everywhere. So so what do you think about Golden Dawn endorsing Donald Trump?
I think that's awesome. you know, that they can recognize us in that way, because I personally don't see Donald Trump as a nationalist, but he's like, you know, like the next best, the closest thing we're getting as far as establishment politicians go. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we can't be Greece. And in like the situation in Europe is it's so much different than we have here, where you can see nationalism in your face. It's well established. It's moving like crazy forward. And you know, the Jewish media out there likes to put out this perception of it as though the people don't want that. Mm-hmm. They like, they'll tell you, this is what you, but we want to die. You know, like, the people actually don't want to die. They want to go with these nationalist parties, but their narrative is just like totally stifling that. But I can really see, you know, groups like Golden Dawn really beating them out of that. Mm-hmm. And destroying the Jewish narrative. And, you know, we see that happening here, you know, with groups like ours and other groups here. And Trump, I guess, would be like the middleman between us and them.
Yeah. Well, and it provides a very interesting thing. You talk about the Jewish narrative. And this is something we saw, of course. Brexit was, you know, a really big deal. And all the media pundits, all the politicians said that Brexit wasn't going to happen. And I was talking, you know, with the Golden Dawn guys about the media narrative that they put forward. And the Jews always say, like, oh, it's only a small fringe that supports Golden Dawn. They're the third largest party in Greece. I mean, I saw, you know, guys everywhere, and they said, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're just scared or xenophobic or Islamophobic. There's always a phobic that they attach to it. And, you know, I can say, just from my own eyes of going and visiting the different offices, there are guys that are members of Golden Dawn since its founding in the early 80s that have been fighting for this. And, you know, I was able to speak to one of their MPs, General Epididios, who is in Brussels. I was able to speak with him while I was there. So you've got a guy who was a general who could have retired on a full pension and just minded his own business. But he thought that it was his duty that if he swore an oath to the Greek people to defend them as a soldier, he was going to defend them politically, even in his retirement. And, you know, seeing people of all different classes coming together, of all different backgrounds, all different professions, the Jewish lie of the idea that it's only a small fringe that supports nationalism in Europe is absolutely proven false. Just go to one of their meetings. Just go to one single meet. I saw this when I was in the Czech Republic, when I was in Germany, when I was in Romania. I've seen it every European country I've gone to. That nationalism speaks to all groups of people because it's about putting the best interests of your community first. And I kind of want to go ahead and bring that back to the United States when it comes to advocacy for our people. A case that's been something that's really been kind of tugging at my heartstrings, and I know it has for you and for other people, the issue of Brian Ogle in Alabama, a 17-year-old who was had some pro-police statements, some Blue Lives Matter statements, after black students at his high school in Alabama had, been doing their Black Lives Matter shtick, and he had supported, you know, Blue Lives Matter, which is implicitly White Lives Matter. I mean, that's the sort of thing that it's become in our culture. When you see a Blue Lives Matter sticker or something like that, the blacks will see that as White Lives Matter, and more often than not, when you're talking about law and order, you're talking about White Lives Matter. So it all kind of comes together. But Brian, I mean, this 17-year-old kid, you know, he has a family, he was a good student, was brutally, viciously attacked by Black Lives Matter supporters, had his skull cracked in multiple places, horrific injuries. He's still in critical condition. And his mother just said in a news interview that he might not live to see his 18th birthday. I want to talk about that a little bit. I know it's an emotional thing to see one of our own attack like this on the Trishulis Worker Party Facebook page. We've linked to the fundraiser to help with his medical bills. And of course, we encourage everyone to keep him and his family in your prayers. But I mean, what do you think about that in regards to, we're talking about nationalism rising, the reaction is rising, whether it's the martyrdom of our comrades in Golden Dawn, you know, that was done several years ago, or the attacking of their offices, or the attempts by the German government to ban the NPD in Germany. I mean, everything, you know, as we're rising, their response is rising. And here in the United States, I think this is a clear case of the George Soros-backed lackeys who have been just put into this bloodlust against whites, attacking and severely injuring, possibly killing or for the rest of his life, harming this young man, you know, hurting his family. What do you think about this case? What do you think this says about white youth in general in modern America?
Well, I think white young people in America, as pertains to Black Lives Matter and all these other Jewish minions that like they like to spring on us, feminism, whatever it is, the minute that you criticize it, now it's being seen that it's such wrong think that they will kill you for it, even for just, you know, you don't have to be as public about it as you and I might be, but just even slightly public about it, that they'll put you in the hospital and potentially kill you for it. There's not a whole lot we advocate. I see us as more of the people that are basically just holding up the flag that the white youth and white America in general is just being pushed into our arms by our enemies. Like, they're being forced into nationalism, even if they didn't. Like, this is why what we've gone back to about saying going close to the center. The fact is, no moderates change anything. Moderation changes being moderate changes nothing. Only fanaticism will do it. And our people, whether they have been in this cause, know about this cause or not, are becoming more fanatical because of things like this.
Well, that's, you know, Commander George Lincoln Rockwell said that whatever you do in life, be a fanatic. You know, if you're going to be a nationalist, be a fanatical nationalist. If you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatic. Be the best doctor you can be. If you're a scientist, invent the newest thing. You know, be a fanatic about your profession because fanatics change history. And that's, you know, when it comes to fanaticism, of course, when we talk here in the United States and in Europe politically, we must follow the laws. You know, we're a law-abiding, peaceful political movement. But we need to take this so seriously because every day we don't win, there are people that are dying. There are people that are being hurt in the streets. Guys like Brian, this young man with his entire life ahead of him, might lose his life because we hadn't defeated Black Lives Matter yet. We hadn't defeated, more importantly, the Jewish oligarchs like Soros that that are pushing these movements and say that whites don't have a right to exist, that are trying to demonize us and using their forces and their money to literally kill us. That, you know, we must be fanatical about this cause and be willing to sacrifice for this cause, because young men, young women, men like Brian, young women like the girls that were sexually assaulted in Cologne, who were assaulted by illegal immigrants here in the United States every single day, who are even murdered, they're relying on us to win, and we need to win to be able to protect our people. So, I mean, where do you think, you know, with cases like this, I would like to see it. And this is one of the issues that, you know, with the party of being community organizers, being activists, that we need to be there on the ground. I think it's so important because the Black community has this. The Hispanic community has this. The Jewish community definitely has this. I mean, if one Jew gets pickpocketed, probably in New York City, they'll call it the National Guard, or at very least the Shambrim police, their private police. But whites have no advocates. So where do you think moving forward, I think it'd be very beneficial for our cause, again, regardless of what group you're a part of, that when events like this happen, we need to be there on the streets to be advocating for these families, for fighting for them. Because I remember with Chris McKnight, a young white man that was beaten in Cincinnati by a mob of 40 blacks last year. We held a protest outside the All-Star game that got media attention. It brought attention to his case, that got that to be a discussion of something that was really brushed under the rug to make that disgust in Cincinnati on what happened in this obvious hate crime. I think to be able to advocate for our people, one, we need to create a situation where they know we're making things better on a daily basis. But when ours are hurt or killed like that, I think we need to be on the streets. So would you agree?
Absolutely. There needs to be boots on the ground. And as you said, the blacks and Hispanics have their boots on the ground in a knee jerk every time this happens. But our situation is a little bit different because we have to be fanatics. Yeah. We have to be fanatical about it because we're self-driven. What we're calling the black community isn't actually the black community. That's Black Lives Matter. What we're calling the Hispanic community isn't actually the Hispanic community. It's groups like La Raza. It's all Jewish-funded groups that get bussed into these things by the truckload with all the gazillion dollars that they have. And we don't have that. But what we do have is our fanaticism. What we do have is our motivation. And our motivation is things like the 17-year-old boy that got attacked. Our motivation is things like the girls attacked in Cologne. And that's enough for us. That motivation is worth more than all the shekels that they could toss into movements like Black Lives Matter. So absolutely, we have to be there on the ground, and we will be there on the ground.
And that's what we're building towards, and it's something that we encourage all white nationalists to be looking towards as well. In the future, we need to be there on the ground to be able to advocate for our families and to fight for them. And of course, as the Jews work, they have rules for the Goyim, rules for us. It looks like Sheldon Adelson, of course, the Jewish billionaire oligarch, who reneged on his promise to give Donald Trump $100 million in the fight against Hillary Clinton because he wasn't kosher enough. You know, again, Donald Trump is not a white nationalist. I don't believe he's anti-Semitic. But by being even a civic nationalist, putting America first instead of Israel, putting America first and American workers and American citizens ahead of the obligations of globalism makes him anti-Semitic de facto. And Sheldon Adelson has come out, and now he's saying that the biggest threat to the Jewish race is miscegenation, that they need to be able to have racial purity. They need to be able, if their people are to survive and their culture is to survive, they need to be able to have true nationalism. So, what do you think in regards to the idea that, of course, the Jews have two sets of laws, one for them, one for the Goyim, and they understand what the destruction of their blood does to destroy their people? I mean, what do you think of the obvious hypocrisy?
I think it's funny. I mean, everything these Skypes like to do is pretty funny and always hypocritical, because they're talking about miscegenation, but they want all the European genes they could possibly scoop in and then stick a kosher stamp on to say, hey, this is a Jew now, welcome to my club. But they don't want brown people in there. They don't want the brown mix in there. They only want the good genes.
I mean, their entire thing is built upon, it's the clergy plan of, you know, the explicit purpose of the European Union was to make sure the European man and woman of the future would be one of mixed race, with no race. Because if you don't have a race, if you don't have an ethnic community, if you don't have a culture, if you don't have a religion, you then just become a slave on their international plantation. That nationalism is the biggest thing as the defender, the bulwark against globalism and Jewish control. And that's why nationalism for all people, I think, is so important, because every nation that they are able to destroy then becomes a staging ground for them. So we need to be able to support nationalists around the world. And speaking of that, in your home city of New York, I hate to bring that up, but you know, it's important for this next story. There was it was unfurled on the on one of the bridges, a Putin banner with a Russian flag that said "Peacemaker." What do you take on that? Because the idea of a New York City of all places, as the United States is careening towards war with Russia and then China, Iran. I mean, it's you know, we've talked about it before. It'd be an absolute nightmare situation. And Russia has deployed missile defense systems to make sure that the bombing of Syrian Arab Army targets never happens again by the U.S. and another quote-unquote accident that no one, I think, believes is an accident. But people in the United States going ahead and putting up things about Putin being a peacemaker, challenging the Jewish narrative. What do you think on that?
We're speaking New York, right? Not yeah. New York City.
No, it's the city.
Where in New York City have they done this?
It was on the Manhattan Bridge.
And how long did it stay up for?
I think only a few hours before the police were able to come and get that down.
That sounds about right. It's interesting to see that there are people in New York City still who have the testicular fortitude to put that up there. And it's even more surprising to me that it lasted longer than 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. But I think that, it really does speak volumes even to the small white minority that's in New York City. I'm not entirely sure if it's whites that put it up, because as you said, nationalism is a global thing. But yeah, I think that's awesome.
Well, yeah, you know, it's so important. You know, the Jewish propaganda that's put forward about Syria, about Russia. I mean, I was listening to NPR just yesterday, and they were talking about the United States is cutting off, you know, a lot of diplomatic relations for the Middle East with Russia over their bombing of civilians in Aleppo. And that's not happening. I mean, if you actually look at the facts on the ground, you know, it's very funny how it works. You know, it's the same way the United States says that when Israel bombs elementary schools and hospitals in Gaza, they say that that Hamas or other organizations were using civilian targets, you know, to try and hide these things. No. You were just dropping a weapons ban by international convention on children. I mean, that's just what you were doing, Israel. But they have no obligation to the truth. The Jews, I mean, I think we all know this, but it has to be said time and time again, the reality has no impact. And the Jewish truth and objective reality are two different things. It's just like we've seen things about World War II, of course, going back to World War I, saying, you know, German soldiers were bayoneting babies, to you know, even excusing now the modern-day Zionist state when they're bombing children, that the children deserved it, basically. But now they're saying that Russia and Syria fighting against the Islamic State, a group created essentially by the United States and backed by Israel as well, for fighting a war, you know, tragically, you know, civilians do end up getting killed. But, you know, saying the idea that they're somehow attacking civilians doesn't make any military sense, doesn't make any political sense, but it makes sense in the Jewish narrative. I mean, as we come to the end of the show, just give us your thoughts on the idea of objective truth versus the Jewish narrative.
Well, I think it's fair to say that to any listeners who are new here, the Jews lie.
Say it isn't so, Jason.
No. They really, that's what they do. Their entire structure is based on lies. All their financial system is based on lies. The narrative that we're fed is based on lies. Their foreign policy is based on lies. And one day we will stuff their filthy lying mouths shut.
Amen. Jason, the modern incarnation of the United States white nationalist movement of Dr. Goebbels right there. And, you know, I really appreciate you being here, Jason. And I appreciate all my listeners. And comrades, it's such an amazing time. And understand also, though, our responsibility, you know, our responsibility to our people, young men like Brian, young men who are volunteered to fight the United States Army that are being pushed towards this conflict with countries that we need to be allies with, not fighting. You know, we need to be able to expose the lies wherever we can, and that's why we must stand together. We must fight together, and then we've got to win together, because our people are counting on us. You know, we are advocates of our folk and their best interests. We need to expose these Jewish lies. We need to expose these Jewish power brokers. and we need to be able to fight for true nationalism. And, you know, my hat goes off, you know, tip of the Stahlhelm to Roddy Duterte, the Punisher of the Philippines, and Bashar al-Assad continuing the fight in Syria, and nationalists around the globe that are fighting for the best interests of their people, because we're all fighting to end Jewish tyranny. So give me a last 10-second final thought to send our listeners in the weekend with.
Nationalism is rising everywhere, all around the world, and it's not a Trump train, it's a nationalist train, and we're all riding it.
It has no brakes.
No brakes on this train. And it's only ridden by fanatics.
Amen. So get your ticket, get on board, we're leaving the station, y'all. So, you know, thank you guys so much for another great week of the Daily Traditionalist. I'm going to look back to being there on Monday, and please look up. Go to the Traditionalist Worker Party Facebook page to see the fundraiser for Brian. Support him if you can. Send a message to his family through Facebook or something to give them your support. You know, be polite, be kind, but show them that the white community is behind them. We're praying for them, and we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that the perpetrators are brought to justice, in the court system, and that this never happens again by being there to be advocates for our people. So, comrades, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. I'll see you on Monday. Hail victory!
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.